Welcome to Not Another Marketing Podcast, where I'm talking to artist, branding expert and marketing strategy consultant Susan Meyer about creativity in digital marketing. Are we losing some of our creative juices? Thanks for downloading. Now, if you're feeling a little bit stuck on the creative side of things, then this episode is for you. Right. Susan is a sculpture artist, marketing expert. She's worked with some of the biggest brands in the world, and she offers a huge amount of insight into how to be more creative with your marketing efforts. With digital, we can kind of get stuck in spreadsheets and data sometimes, can't we? So it's nice to be able to step back and experiment in a creative way. So if you're trying to get a bit of your creativity back, then check out this episode. Now, you can find Susan on a website and on LinkedIn as well. I'll leave links in the show notes. And very quickly, can I mention that Not Another Marketing Podcast is totally ad-free. Love it if you could subscribe on your favourite podcast player and give the pod a quick shout on social media. You can check out all the links, more podcasts at jtid.co.uk/podcasts. Right, the first thing I asked Susan was if she thinks we've lost some of our creativity during the internet years.
You know, I think it's easy to get hung up on where can I be and how many outlets can platforms can I be on at any given time. And there's so many options and so many opportunities to connect, which means there's so much content needed. And it's easy to get focused on the numbers and the volume, you know, quantity instead of quality. And so in terms of creativity, when I think about creativity in marketing, I think about my messaging, you know, what is it that I'm communicating, and, you know, both verbally and visually, what is it that I'm going to sort of push through that marketing funnel? And I think it's easy to lose sight of the importance of what you're pushing through when you're focusing on how much you're pushing through.
Yeah, I mean, when I go back, I'm old. So when I go back like to the late 80s and the early 90s, you would look at sort of like the non-creative type people would tend to head towards sales, and the creative people would tend to head towards marketing. Whereas what I'm seeing quite a lot now is technical people heading towards marketing, which, do you think that's good?
Well, I think the lines have blurred, right? Now everyone is supposed to do everything.
Yeah.
You know, like if you're a small business owner, you're supposed to be an expert in all of those things at the same time,
yeah.
Which wasn't the case back then, right?
Sure.
You were supposed to be an expert in whatever product you made. And then there was kind of a traditional sales and marketing channel. And now we're sort of all doing those things for ourselves. And, you know, even for a large business, I think, you know, when I work with larger clients, I see that the sales and marketing lines are quite blurred. So, to answer your question, I don't know that it's a bad thing. I think, you know, in some cases, it's allowing people who are working in roles that are not traditionally considered creative to be very creative. And so that can be a good thing. But, you know, I think we need to be mindful of knowing what it is that we're doing and why it is that we're doing it, and not just sort of saying, okay, I'm going to put on all the hats and do everything.
Do you still think there's room for a gut feeling?
Of course. I mean, yeah. I think the value of intuition is has always been and will always be very high.
Because you turn around and you try and do some research that would help you understand your customer and your client, try and work out what their needs and wants. How do you go about studying this nowadays?
Yeah, and that's a really interesting question in light of the question you asked me before, you know, is there room for gut feeling? So, you know, early in my career, I had a proper sort of on-the-job education in doing quantitative research as well as qualitative research. And while there certainly is value in understanding the numbers and doing the quantitative research, what I saw was that you can also massage those numbers to say different things. You can also, you know, genuinely interpret those numbers in different ways. And so what I learned in those days was the importance of you would want to do the quantitative work because you would want large numbers, right? You want to really be more than just directionally correct by talking to a few dozen consumers if you're running a multi-billion-dollar brand.
Sure.
But the value of those one-on-one, high-touch situations where you're doing qualitative research is what allows you to have those intuitions. And I think they are better at sparking, you know, sort of truly innovative ideas and getting a feel for who those people are that you're serving with your business in a way that's more difficult to do when you're looking at data sets.
So I think one thing that the internet has done in general and the web has done in general has democratized content. We can all create whatever type of content. We don't need a television studio now to create video, do we? We can do it on a smaller level if we're a smaller brand. So you still think understanding what the client wants, their needs, their wants, and then creating the content for them is still pretty important. And you can still use your gut. You can just think to yourself, you know, I think they'd like that.
Absolutely. Still very important, of course, to understand in a visceral way who your client or your customer is. You know, I think the value in the democratization is that you can very quickly, instantaneously really express who you are in a way, or, you know, communicate what it is that you want to communicate in a way that was a much more laborious process with many steps and layers in the past. And so I think the key now is to say, you know, how do I connect those two things in a meaningful way? So I want to have an understanding of who it is that I'm speaking to, and I have this opportunity to say whatever it is that I want whenever I want to, and the work that needs to be done, the mindfulness that needs to be brought is connecting those things. So you can think about it in both directions. You should think about it in both directions, sort of saying, okay, I want to bring to the table who I genuinely am or who we genuinely are as a company, and thinking about, well, who does that really resonate with? And so using that to define your target, and then looking in the other direction, saying, okay, I have a business. I have a group of people that I'm serving today, understanding what it is that they want, or maybe things that they want that I'm not currently addressing. And how can I think about doing that in a way that's true to what I, you know, believe and the skills that I have?
Is there still time for experimentation? I mean, I'm sure there is. I'm sure you do plenty of it, dealing with you know, enormous companies, huge companies. But is there still room for experimentation for smaller brands, do you think?
Absolutely. I mean, I think without experimentation, there's no innovation, right?
Sure.
I think experimentation will always be important. And I actually think that larger companies maybe struggle more with that than small businesses, right? Because they have more to lose. They have shareholders, perhaps, that they're beholden to. They have more strict structures. You know, they've got budgets to meet, et cetera. And so sometimes that can actually be more challenging to be truly innovative or to take risks, whereas small businesses are in a great position from that perspective, where they can take risks and they can move, you know, a little bit off brand or stretch their brand in a way that larger companies who have these very, very established brands sometimes struggle to do.
It's funny you say that, because I'd have thought it had been the opposite way around, where the big brand with the bigger budget could experiment more at the end of the day.
I mean, they can do more research, right? They can do more, you know, scientific experimentation. You know, if you're a food company, you can have a whole lab full of food scientists playing with flavors of chips. Yeah. So yes, they have that as a resource. But there's a huge risk, you know, if you're the Doritos brand, it's a huge risk that you're taking. You have all this equity and all this awareness and all this brand love from a very loyal base of consumers. And it's not just as easy as, well, hey, let's launch three new flavors. That, you know, potentially alienates that base that's become very loyal to you. So where, you know, if you're a startup popcorn company, you can do whatever you want, right? You can, you know, there's all upside.
Yeah, I remember hedgehog crisps, hedgehog flavored crisps in the UK. I mean, they tasted like chicken.
It always is that, right? It's always tastes like chicken.
Yeah, they didn't last very long. It wasn't a very successful experiment. I mean, talking about the experiment, I suppose a smaller brand, you can be more agile and move quicker.
Yes, that's exactly it.
So as marketers, there's times when we feel stuck or we feel non-creative, or we feel a little bit stodgy, and we just, I mean, even if we're doing something as basic as just trying to write a few social media posts, how do we overcome this? How do you overcome this sort of like stuck feeling?
Well, so what I do with my clients and what I recommend to people are, you know, really things from the artist's world, right? Take a walk, you change your environment, you get out into nature if you're in a city or vice versa, you read new things, you talk to new people, you sort of jog different parts of your brain. A big thing I advocate is writing by hand or drawing, right, if you're predisposed to that, by hand on a piece of paper, because we've all become so accustomed to the convenience and speed of making everything digital all the time, but it actually uses a very different part of your brain when you are making the eye-hand connection in a tactile way. And so when I do innovation workshops or brand positioning workshops with people, I have them do everything with Sharpies and Post-it notes and physically cutting out pictures and taping them to the wall or to the board. And it creates a different conversation than if we were all looking at a PowerPoint document.
Absolutely, yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I'm writing notes now on a pad with a pen, and I think when you write things down, I think there's been quite a bit of research on that. You tend to remember them better, don't you?
Yes, I mean that definitely works for me.
Yeah, because when I write notes down during a podcast for a question or a follow up or something, I never usually have to look back at my notes. I can remember it.
That's right. Because those words have shapes. I mean, this is probably particularly true for visual learners. I know that there's a lot of theory around people have different learning styles, but certainly for visual learners, that's very important.
So would you encourage smaller agencies, small to medium-sized agencies to maybe move away from the, when planning campaigns, move away from the digital thing and start things off on paper?
I think there's a real role for that. Not to say that you want to move away from it completely and go back to the days when you're doing everything on a cutting board, but to have a part of the process that does that, whether it's the very beginning, the kickoff, or some ideation piece in the middle where you're doing that, but just have a palate cleanser somewhere in there where you're moving away from a screen and you're looking face to face at other people and hand to paper, right? And using that somewhere in your process.
I must admit, one of the things I really like doing when I've worked with some agencies, creating landing pages, for example, is when people actually get the pen and paper out and we start drawing the web page. And we start designing what the shape of what it's meant to look like on a piece of paper. And it tends to lead to better websites, to be honest.
I mean, that's how I do it. And I truly don't understand. I don't know another way. I personally could not do it any different way. I have a quadrille, you know, like a grid notepad.
Yeah.
And which makes it easy to sort of draw squares in the right way. And I literally map out the wireframe in pencil on paper versus using a piece of software to do it. And then, you know, the engineers and developers can make the proper digital version of that. But to see it as a three-dimensional object, because the way that people, I think websites is a great example, because the way that people navigate a website, yes, you're looking at a two-dimensional screen, but our brains are integrating things three-dimensionally. So when I'm thinking about pages, I'm thinking about that in terms of structure and depth. It's more like they're cubes or blocks of information than they are two-dimensional pages of information. And I'm thinking about how I'm navigating back and forth between them. It's not a linear thing, right? Like the way we navigate online is, in fact, not at all linear. So thinking about it in that way and plotting out, you know, we're going to direct them here and then we're going to direct them back there. And you've suddenly got like a dot to dot drawing.
Yeah.
I think that's much better done on paper.
It's kind of like trying to draw out the journey that you want your client to take.
Yes. And that's another exercise I do with clients, not just for websites or digital media, but for their overall brand process. Will draw out the customer journey literally as if there's a path, you know, like those old board games, like the Game of Life or whatever. Yeah, there's a path on the paper where you track sort of what the customer is doing in their day or what the customer is doing along the journey of, you know, using this product or service.
It leads to more conversation and collaboration, I think, as well, doesn't it, between different staff members when you're actually stood there drawing things?
Yeah, I think it, in particular, it helps people who work across disciplines within a company communicate with each other, right? Because the graphic designers use different software. You know, each piece of software is a language, right? So if you're a graphic designer, you speak Illustrator, let's say, whereas the software engineers, they have their own languages. And then the marketing folks, or the planners, they speak Excel. And so put down your software and have a conversation with each other the old-fashioned way so that you're all speaking the same language.
Sure. And I suppose this plays into one aspect of time, of how do we combat time with all this? Because being creative and trying new things, it can take time and might take more time than we've got. And when we've got a deadlines approaching, when we've got budgets that restrict us, how do we combat that?
Yeah, this is something I've been thinking a lot about for my clients and also for myself. So I think there's two very different ways of managing our time if we are in artistic creative mode versus if we are in managerial planner corporate mode, right? So the Google Calendar, and I do both. So I have the Google Calendar with the time slots broken out by the half hour or the hour, and they're color coded, and it's quite a linear thing. And that's really helpful for the manager side of, you know, making sure I know where I'm supposed to be at the right time. And I sort of plan out my week and puzzle blocks and move things around. And that's great. But when you're in creative mode, your creative brain does not want to work between 3 and 3:30 on project A. It just doesn't work like that. So carving out larger blocks of time, like full days or half days, but multi-hour blocks of time where you just say, I'm clearing the space to work on, you know, maybe it's to work on one project, or maybe it's just to say, this is going to be my ideation time if I'm working on multiple projects, to sort of schedule free time, you know, free thinking time, is really important for doing creative work.
So you actually schedule some time to think?
I do.
That's good. Because I know there's a few middle managers who will be grumbling at their staff, and they'll be walking around saying, why aren't you sat in front of your terminal typing away?
Yeah, that was when I worked in those sorts of environments, something I found very frustrating, because generally that's not rewarded in a more corporate type environment. And I had that experience of being a bit slapped on the wrist for like, what are you doing? And I was thinking, I'm doing my most productive work right now when you think I'm not working. You know, so it's a little bit of a culture shift that needs to happen around that if you want to have a more creative organization.
I know you do a lot of branding work, and I want to ask this question because it's kind of popular at the moment, topical at the moment. What are your thoughts on brand advocacy? Should small businesses particularly enter into this? Because a lot of them seem wary. They seem worried that it might attract the wrong type of attention if they're supporting causes and things. Do you think they should get involved, or do you think it should be something that a small business particularly should stay away from?
I think it's a matter of where that comes from. If it comes from a genuine place, like the founder has a lifelong interest in this particular cause, or, you know, you're making clothing and you decide as an organization that you're going to, you know, work to sustainably source the materials for that clothing or food, or I think that's absolutely appropriate. But I think where it's not appropriate and frankly won't be at all effective and probably will backfire is when you try to jump on the bandwagon of a popular cause and it sort of comes out of nowhere. And that there's actually a lot of research on how that backfires. So it really has to do with the origin story. You want to have a genuine origin story for whatever advocacy you're going to do. And then follow through, right? So you might have a genuine backstory, but then, you know, you do a bunch of kind of marketing communication about how great you are with regard to sustainability, but then it turns out that it's actually kind of a pain and it's expensive and the supply chain has issues, and then you don't really do it. And that's a problem also.
Sure. Yeah. I think if people read up on how Patagonia...
They're a great example of that
because... I think the brands that should worry, or do you think the brands that should worry more are the ones who want to kind of jump on a bandwagon or kind of say, we support this, we support that, we support, but not really want to follow it up with maybe cutting their profits over time or with having to do things in a different way, restructure their manufacturing, for example?
Yeah, I say don't do that. I mean, I think those brands can come out and offer support. You can, you know, on certain days, right, when social media, there's a day when everybody's, you know, sort of banding together and saying, we stand together in support of this cause. Fine, that's appropriate to come out and offer your support. But to sort of say that you're building your brand around a certain cause and then not really have your heart in it or not really be willing to sacrifice your profitability for it, just don't do it. You don't need to. Not every brand has to be an advocate.
Okay. Final question. If a marketer is sat there, could be a freelancer, could be somebody working for an agency, and they want to be a bit more creative, they feel as if they're stuck in a rut. They're writing the same sort of social media posts. They're creating the same sort of content. They're designing the same sort of, it's just same all the time. What advice would you give for them to try and sort of like, you know, shake it up a little bit and move to that next level?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a soul searching process at that point. So, you know, the first fork in the road is what you're in need of, you know, a retreat and refresh kind of situation where you just need to take a week long walkabout and get inspired and take a break from what you're doing and try new things, like we were saying before, do that sort of creative walking around. Or are you really finding yourself in a situation where you're like, I might not be in the right job and I'm not creatively inspired? And so I think taking a hard look at, you know, what situation you're really facing. And I think there's a lot of great sort of journaling and self-reflection exercises that you can do to think through that. Another thing that I've seen be really successful is focusing for a while on whatever your hobby is, or, you know, everybody's got a side hustle now, but most people have something other than their main income paid job that they care a lot about, that they're passionate about. And so I've worked with people a lot recently on breaking down what it is that they love about that passion project, what skills they've gained from that passion project, and thinking about, are there things that I can bring from that into my day-to-day paid work? And that also clarifies the, like, maybe I'm on the right path, but I can, you know, spice it up with doing some of the things that I actually enjoy doing, or dialing up the amount of time that I spend doing the things I enjoy doing, versus saying, like, you know what, this passion project is actually really my passion and I want to be doing more of that. And that's the answer.
Yeah, it's really interesting you say looking at something that you're actually passionate about, and maybe you're not in the right job. I think one of the things that digital can always be seen as, that the internet in general says that digital marketing is easy, but it's not, is it? It's really not.
I think it's terrifyingly hard. There's so much noise out there. You know, how do you really meaningfully get through to people when they have so much coming at them all the time?
Yeah, you're right. It's been fascinating chatting to you, Susan. I appreciate your time. Where can we find you? Where's your website and all your social media bits and pieces?
So I have a landing page called Electrify Your Work. And from there, you can find all the other good stuff.
Fantastic. Brilliant, Susan. Thanks for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. This was really an interesting conversation.
Thanks again to Susan for her time. Don't forget to check the show notes for links on how to find Susan on her website and social media and that. If you've enjoyed this episode, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, your favourite podcast player. Just search for Not Another Marketing Podcast. Thanks for listening.